5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice in its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister. The look it was giving me.
Seven, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sheriff, see ya!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Woody and I are sitting down again. We're doing a throwback part two of all of the past shows that we've done and talk about some things behind the scenes with the episodes. If you get a chance, visit us at SasquatchChronicles.com. If you've had an encounter you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. I have a list of people I'm still working on, but go ahead and send me your email, and I'm working down the list. You can contact me at Wes@SasquatchChronicles.com. You know, one of the episodes that stands out the most, Woody, was the deathbed confession.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a secret about the deathbed confession episode. I almost didn't air it. I almost never played it for the audience.
You crazy or what? That's the best. You know what? Honestly, I'm going to tell you. And I had nothing to do with that show. I wasn't even on that show.
Yeah, you were.
Was I?
Yeah. You were on that show.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah, you were.
Was I really?
Yeah. Yeah, you're on the show.
Totally remember the show, but I don't remember being on it.
Here's the thing about the Deathbed Confession show.
My favorite show.
Well, what's crazy is when I first heard it, I thought...
Was I pregnant then?
Were you pregnant?
Was I having a baby then, or what? Was
it about the same time I was having a
baby?
No. Okay. No. You were just drinking heavy during that time.
Well, that's understandable.
But I'll tell you a secret about the Deathbed Confession. I almost didn't play it because when we recorded that show, I didn't think it was that good. I was like,
I was on that show.
Yeah. But what's weird is, so when we played it, I was like, you know what? I didn't think it was that good.
I do remember.
I liked the guy that was on it. I liked the guy that was telling the story. I thought it was an interesting story, but I thought, you know what? I don't think anyone's going to like this show. I don't think anyone's really going to enjoy the show because it was very – we didn't have the original – the old man that passed away. We didn't have him on there, and it was firsthand, but it was kind of secondhand. You know what I mean? Like, these guys went in and saw pictures, and he was telling the story. I get more emails about the Deathbed Confession show than I do any other show.
You know what? I remember doing that show now. I'm trying to redeem myself here. I remember doing that show, and I remember being asked a question afterwards, what I thought about it, and I paused. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I sat there, and I go, I just need a minute. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Here's a clip.
Growing up, I went on a church mission for my church. It was a 2-year mission, and we were in set to two missionaries. I served my mission in Sacramento, California. And while I was there, we did a lot of our time was just knocking on doors and sharing a message. One of the men that we came to, we knocked on his door, and he let us in. Wasn't a really good help. We shared a message with him. While we were in his house, we noticed that he had deer and elk mounts on his wall and a big lake trout. And so after our message, my companion, he was from Montana, and he loved to hunt and fish. And I was from Idaho, and I loved to hunt and fish. So, of course, our conversation drifted towards hunting. Had some good stories. We came back two more times to the gentleman. We set up appointments and came back. He let us come back in. And each time we came back in, we'd give our little spiritual thought, but then we'd go right back to hunting. On the third time that we were at his house, my companion was telling him, you know, I like hunting alone. He goes, I like being out there. I get to see more animals. And so William, this is the man's name. His name was William. I won't tell you his last name. But William said, you know, you shouldn't be out there hunting alone. It's just not safe. There's things out there that we just, you know, need to be left alone. And my companion, without even saying a word, said, oh, you mean Sasquatch? And William's kind of went blank for a second. He goes, yeah, things like that. Well, it didn't go any further than that. We left that day, and I, of course, wanted to know with my companion how we met Sasquatch. And he goes, well, my brothers and my dad were heading up hunting, and one crossed the road. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. So he told me that story. And anyhow, the animal crossed the road and went up and jumped into a wash. We call them washes. It's where water comes down a mountain and cuts out a pretty deep ravine. And it went and jumped in one of these. And they had no intention of following it. But it was neat to hear his story. Well, we went back to meet with William a couple of days later. His landlord said that he was in the hospital. He was sick with
emphysema.
Emphysema, thank you. You know, Wes. He was sick with emphysema, so we were thinking, oh, great. Well, we left a phone number, and a couple days later, William called us and said, hey, listen, I'm home from the hospital. Come on over. I want to visit with you boys. And so we went over, and when we got there, he said, I really don't want to hear a spiritual message today. He says, there's some things that have been on my mind that have happened to me throughout my life, and I just kind of want to clear them up. And I took it as, okay, kind of a deathbed confession, because from the looks of him, he wasn't doing very well. And we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know what he was going to tell us. But he started in on this. He said this happened back in 71. He said he was a sheriff officer in the Dakotas. He didn't say whether it was North or South Dakota. And he said him and his deputies were approached by an agency of the government to eventually kill one of these animals. William had told us also that these creatures had been kind of a menace in that area. The government decided, I guess, to come in and do something about it. But William said didn't really say a lot of details. He told us that later that a lot of that stuff he was going to just take to his grave with him, but he had to get some of this off of his mind. But going on with the story, he said the agency, let's use that word, had already been monitoring these creatures. They were living in a canyon. How the whole thing kind of got going is they'd been monitoring, and they were going to go ahead and do the project of taking one of these animals or one of these creatures. And William said it was our responsibility to do the shooting. He said we were in a 4-man helicopter, and when they got there, well, they already knew the plan, but two other helicopters, smaller 2-man helicopters, had already been pushing these creatures out of the canyon. Well, things didn't go as planned. The creatures split, went up out of the canyon, both sides, and they did have a female, which we found out later was a female. She did exactly like was planned. She went right down the canyon, and they had what they guess they called a bait station. I'll explain that a little bit later. But the female was pushed down the canyon. Backing up a little bit, when we got there, William had a small box. Inside that box, he had a cassette, and he had some pictures. he kept this from the agency, unknown by the agency, but I'll tell you that part later too. So anyhow, he had pictures, he had an audio. I'll kind of use both of them as I play this out, because that's what he did with us, except for we had the information in front of us. He said that as they pushed the female down the canyon, she eventually come out in a clearing, and it was a small clearing where they had the bait station. And he took one photo, and it's the very first photo, and he had to actually point me where the creature was, the Bigfoot. I said, oh, okay, that's where it's at. The next picture I see, she is walking, but there is a youngster behind her. It's probably about, well, I didn't know how tall it was. William said it was about 3 foot tall. So it wasn't a baby, but it was still a youngster. And it was following pretty close behind her in the picture. The bait station was something I'd never heard of and never seen. And thanks to Wes, he finally helped me figure it out. They had a oval-shaped tree, pretty large tree. And in this tree were cereal boxes. And I just kind of figured out the cereal boxes. I knew it was cereal boxes because in one of the pictures it showed a cornflakes box. And I think another one was an Apple Jacks box. And they were situated all over this tree that looked like a round Christmas tree. About four of the photos, the pictures that he showed us, showed the animal annoyed by the two helicopters. Only in one of the pictures, actually, if she's coming out of the canyon, do you actually see the bottom skids or the, you know, the landing gear of the helicopters. So you kind of know the other helicopters are there, but they were swinging around and keeping her going towards the bait station. We didn't really get any good look at her. Just to make note here, I couldn't tell how big she was. I mean, I guess she had wide shoulders, but when you're taking pictures from the air, the size all goes. You don't have anything to judge the size on. If you're on ground level, you can say, oh, yeah, this is big as that tree or as fat as that tree. But when you're in the air, it's pointed at the ground, and you don't have anything to judge the size off of. So I can just say that it was a hairy creature. At this point, he played the video, or not the video, but didn't have any video, the cassette tape. And about the first 3 minutes, all you heard was the helicopter blade. It was just really kind of annoying. Then you hear William say, are you loaded? And you can hear that distinctly. And someone else, his deputy, was his deputy, said, yes. And then he responds, proceed forward. At this point, William said, I threw the rope ladder out of the helicopter. This is where the other, I want to say four pictures, but I think it was five pictures came into play. He was able to snap off because now the creature had turned around. I guess I got to back up here. I got to back way up. I didn't think about the baby. After the first photo, I guess after the second photo, you see her and her young. Well, William told me that right after they snapped that picture, she darted into a thicket. And of course the helicopters went and chased her out of this thicket. Well, when she emerged from the thicket, there was only one of them. It was just her, and she hid her young. Anyhow, getting back to the point where I was at, they took several pictures. All of the pictures, by the way, are clear pictures. None of them are fuzzy or what I see on the internet. These are all clear, distinct pictures of the creature. The four pictures that were taken, or five pictures that were taken, where she's actually looking up at the helicopter, she's got her arms up. The wind and the turbulence from the helicopter is making her kind of shield the wind. You can tell from the grass around where she's at that it's just matted down because of the wind. And her hair, you can tell from the pictures that it's kind of matted down, like her head and stuff. Just to kind of let you know the state that she was in, she was stressed. I mean, she was disoriented, I would say, confused, really stressed at what was going on, and I can see why. She had her hands up. I told Wes I noticed the insides of the hands on the picture. It kind of looked like she put her hands in dirt, you know, kind of a grayish black or something, grayish color. But we got really good descriptions of her face. Wes kind of asked me about the face, and I said, well, around the eyes and the nose, and I do believe between the nose and the lip there was no hair. The hair was right above the eyebrows and got thicker as it went up towards the top. She did kind of have, a cone-shaped head. The head sat right on the shoulders, no neck. The eyes were big. They were black. There was no white to the eyes, just black eyes. She had a flat nose. She had a big mouth. And almost every picture that was taken, her mouth was open. But because of the helicopter and maybe because of the condition she was in, her mouth was cocked kind of sideways. It wasn't just open. It was kind of like she was, I would even look at one of the pictures and say she was growling, had the helicopter blade not been going. She looked like she was like really ticked off. And that's just kind of give you a description. Her color was, I would say almost a black brown. In the photos, it doesn't, I guess it's kind of glistening hair, but the helicopter kind of had it matted down. But, anyhow, he throws the rope ladder and this is where the picture stops. And the audio keeps going. We listen. What he told me is that his deputy climbed down the ladder. When he got near the bottom rung, he reached up to the step just above him, looped his hand up and over the second step that was above that, and pulled his arm down so it really just kind of locked him in. I think he did this for his safety in case he slipped off the ladder. He had with him a high-power rifle. He was using a .30-06. I was wondering if a .30-06 was a powerful enough gun. I use a 7 mag when I hunt, and I probably would have used a 300 or maybe a 50 grain or something, but he had a .30-06. And he had climbed down the ladder. At this point, William's just telling us the story now. We don't have any more pictures. And he says that he took aim. She still had her hands in the air and shot her. Point blank right in the chest. So at this point, William has slowed down a little bit. He's probably he's emotional at this point. And this is the part that's really probably bugging in his life. And I was at that point wishing I hadn't heard the story. I was like, holy cow. I mean, after looking at these pictures, how could anyone shoot this thing? I told Wes earlier, I said, you know, this thing looked human in the face, but animal on the body. Had an animal body, I would say more animalistic, but his face was more humanistic. He shot her, and as soon as he shot her, she let out this scream, blood-curdling scream. And it lasted about 7 seconds. And I, you know, 7 seconds doesn't seem long, but on the audio, it seemed like a long time. And the scream was just hideous. I mean, it is a painful, awful scream. It even had I would call it a gurgle scream, a little bit of a gurgle scream to it. You had to listen to it to hear it, but it just sounded awful. He said as soon as that scream was done, she left and took off towards the canyon. And he said that first foot that pushed off, her first foot, he said, I bet she traveled 8 to 10 yards. And I thought, wow. And he said the second foot, he said it looked just like a long jumper as you're getting ready to leap off. He said each foot pushed itself further. And he said she just flew up the canyon. Of course, we're listening to the audio, and all of a sudden we hear another gunshot. And we're like, ah, did you shoot her? He said, no. He said at this point, after she took off, her young immediately tried to follow. But as soon as it got out of the bushes, it got disoriented with the helicopters, immediately just stopped. And he said they swung their helicopter over and he loaded another, chambered another shell, and they just shot right in the head and killed it instantly. Pretty traumatic hearing his story on it, and I just couldn't believe the ethics on it. Just totally wrong. As soon as that shot was taken, their helicopter was motioned to go back to base. And he said we had to get our gunman, his deputy, back in the helicopter. So they flung out about 60 yards. He says while he was climbing back in the chopper, he said they moved quick. They had one of their choppers on the ground, loading the body into a burlap sack, putting it into a net, hooked underneath the helicopter, and they were off. And he went back, and that was basically all he told us. My companion then asked him, what happened to the female. Did you ever get her? And he just flat out said, I won't go into that. I'm not going to cover what happened there. Putting that together, I kind of listened to, I've listened to every one of your guys' shows. And I kind of thought, you know, probably what happened is she ran up that canyon, expired, seeing that she took almost a point blank right to the chest. And maybe they had a run-in with the others trying to come back and get her. And I thought maybe they did more shooting that we don't even know about. I don't know. I'm just putting some pieces together. But anyhow, he warned us at the end of this. He goes, I'm taking a lot of this to my grave. He just said, it'd probably be wise for you guys not to say too much about this. He says, I don't want anything to see happen to you. He actually acquired the camera and the cassette tape. He had it hidden in his lunchbox. They never checked his lunchbox. He said he was put under oath that he would not say anything to anybody. He said, other than us two, he had never revealed this. And I told Wes on the phone that I had never told my family or friends or my own personal family. I haven't told anybody. Wes was the first one I talked to. But really, on the mission I was on, I had so much going on that in a couple days, I pretty much just put it in the back of my mind and chalked it up for something I wish I hadn't heard, but maybe I'd research later. And of course, research and stuff like this, you don't get anything. I couldn't find anything up in Dakotas. So that's basically the story, guys.
That's a lot to take in. I'm still kind of just sitting here thinking over the whole thing, how it played out and what happened. I don't know what to say right now.
I will say, and I'm still kind of awe-inspired by that, because that was probably one of the best accounts that you can relate with, and be true to. Because you can actually picture yourself, the helicopter, you can picture guys shooting down, you can picture Bigfoot running for its life. You can picture all that. And I remember being so involved with that, but I can't remember being on the show like I told you earlier. But no, but I do remember it now after you say that. That was probably one of my, that's definitely goes within my top five.
And what was interesting is the guy that we had on didn't want his real name released.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were a Mormon. I think
they were.
Yeah. And he was telling me about how
he invited them in.
I honestly believe that the guy was sincere who was telling the story. I'll tell you the other one that sticks out for me. Here's the ones I remember. And this is going to sound kind of arrogant. Go ahead with your smart ass comment.
Nothing. I'm done. I'll let you go.
Here's the ones that I remember. And again, this is probably going to piss the audience off, but here's the shows I really, really remember. I remember the Siege of Hanabi. I remember the Spotsville Monster.
In 1975, in Spotsville, Kentucky, the Nunley family home was terrorized by a mysterious 8-foot-tall creature.
Over 35 years ago, and I remember like it was yesterday. What I remember most was the fear that we all felt when these things came around, and it was the first time that I'd ever seen my dad scared of anything.
I heard a bunch of limbs breaking coming through the woods, like something coming through the woods, something large coming through the woods. And all of a sudden, everything got real quiet, and I looked over to the edge of the woods, and he was standing right in the little gully right outside of the woods, just standing there watching us. I couldn't even speak. I was so scared.
I knew they were there. I didn't know what they were, but I knew they were not figments of our imagination, because it killed all our animals. This place is probably the number one spot where these creatures like to hang out for whatever reason.
And there was this thing standing right directly under that light. What that thing is, I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing, it's eerie. I don't care what you believe. My eyes seen it. And and I'm not the only one that's seen it, and I don't care whether you believe me or not, I know it's truth. So help me God, that is truth.
After the creature killed the family's pets and livestock, it seemed to be lured in while the children were playing. The family was terrified for their life.
You better believe it.
The family decided to take matters into their own hands. Four armed men climbed to the roof of the family's home and waited. The creature was seen exiting the barn. This is their story.
That was like 12 different tracks, audio tracks playing at once. That was a lot of freaking work. I know it sounds like it's not a lot of work, like I'm just slamming things together. That was a lot of work. And when we talked to Mrs. Nunley, you know, she's an older lady. And you know one thing I like about older people? They're very direct, and they don't really give a damn what you think.
Yeah.
And she was very, very direct. And that was one of the stories that really stuck out, because the family had planned on burning the house down with them in it. Things got so bad on this property, they were in such fear that this thing was going to kill them, that the dad had rigged the house basically to burn down with them in it. And he sat the whole family down and he said, hey, if it would be better for all of us to go to heaven than to have like the little sister get eaten by one of these things. That's true fear. That's a real story, man. Yeah. When you listen to something like that and you listen to something.
If I'm going
to
die, I'm taking everybody's ass with me.
Right. The other one that really sticks out for me. Probably, and this probably isn't a favorite episode of everyone else, but when I did the Ape Canyon story.
July 1924, 2 miles east of Mount St. Helens in Washington State, 5 miners' lives were changed forever. Fred Beck and his associates find tracks and begin arguing.
What, no fair?
How do you know you didn't actually see it?
Well, I've seen the track. It's about 18 inches long.
The 5 miners were stalked and harassed by an unknown creature when traveling from their mine to their cabin. Until one day, they came face to face with the creature. One of the miners raised his rifle, took aim, and fired. It was a decision he would later come to regret. Few stories become legendary. This is one of them. In an act of revenge, the creatures returned that night as the miners slept.
the creatures threw rocks and tried to get into the cabin. They came at the men from every angle, including the roof. The creatures were everywhere. The miners fought back, firing anywhere and everywhere. The attack lasted through the night. Just before dawn, the creatures broke off their attack and left. All five miners, along with their cabin, survived the attack. Moving debris and exiting the cabin, the men try to comprehend what had happened that night. Men made a pact never to speak of this to anyone. The story eventually got out. Where the attack happened is today called Ape Canyon. Was like 12, 13 tracks that I put together to try and tell the Ape Canyon story. And I wanted it to be true to the story. I wanted people to, when they listen to that, go, wow, this is really cool. Like I can plug my headphones in and I can just picture myself there. And I realize this is probably not a favorite of the fans out there, but it's a favorite of mine because it was a...
Well, you put so much work into it.
Yeah.
You put so much work into it, and you wanted to the story was perceived based on how you saw it, and you wanted everybody to see it the same way you did.
Right.
It's really hard for me to really pick out a favorite.
It would be easier for me to pick out the non-favorites than the favorites, to be honest with you. What's your non-favorite? I know of one right now that you and I got an argument over. What? I'm not going to mention it.
No, say it. Where are you going with it?
Come on, guy.
Which one?
So we had Kumbo on.
Oh, my God.
Let me start off.
I think I even quit. Didn't I even was like, I ain't even going to do anymore.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because, you know, when Will used to talk about Mr. Black and all this other stuff, I remember you're like, I'm out. I'm done.
This is all BS to me. You know, this is, come on.
You know what? You were absolutely right. I did say that. And that you did act like that.
But it used to frustrate me because I was like, let's keep moving forward.
Yeah, let's get there. Let's hear the show.
In a week, it'll be forgotten. Let's keep moving forward. And I remember you were really quick to call BS on a lot of things. And I was like, man,
I was. People don't even know that, though. People don't even know what we talked about behind the scenes.
No.
You and I were in arguments. Will would say something smart ass. I mean, we next thing you know, you and all three of us were in a discussion. And people have no idea, actually, on some of the stuff that was said.
Yeah.
Wes is a jerk and he won't listen to anything I have to say anyways.
Oh, really?
So, but yeah, I do remember that. I do apologize to you. I had a lot going on though, man.
You're an asshole.
Well, that's true. That's true.
No, but I mean like Kumba.
Have another drink.
No, but I mean like when I, you know, like I enjoyed Kumba's stories. I enjoyed.
You enjoyed Mr. Rogers too, so.
Wow. No, but I mean, you know, sometimes when you listen to these people.
He was a cokehead and gay, so.
My apologies to Mr. Rogers' family that might be listening to the show.
I'm sorry.
No. But I mean, for me, I enjoy hearing people's encounter stories. I enjoy. And I'll never ask someone to go, well, show me proof. Because there really is no proof. I'll tell you one of the encounters, and I don't think you were a part of the show at the time. One of the guys that called in was Tracy. Here's another thing most people don't realize about this episode. It was over 2 hours long, and I almost didn't take his call. I think Will had something going on, and we were just about ready to run out of time. I thought, well, I'll take one more call. And more people talk about Tracy's encounter. He's a guy that broke down on the side of the road, got out to take a pee, and thinks he peed on one of them by mistake. And then it looked into his van.
I live in East Central Alabama, and I had several encounters back in the early part of around 2002 or 2003 on some hunting club land that I used to have. And I reported them to the BFRO, kind of got the brush off, and they kind of didn't put what I reported on their site. But, I have a job that keeps me traveling. This past July or August, I don't remember the date, I was going from Tuscumbia, Alabama to Bolivar, Tennessee. It was storming and, really heavy rain, heavy storms, and it's a pretty long stretch of I'd crossed over into Mississippi.
Take your time.
I'm sorry, but I'm getting shakes right now just thinking about this. I was within a mile and a half of Tishomingo High School on that highway. Just a really long, flat stretch. And, The belt, the serpentine belt on my truck broke. I drive a big delivery van, a big Dodge Sprinter delivery van. And, I pulled over and called into the office like we're supposed to do, you know, and I told them I knew what had happened. I raised the hood up and looked, sure enough, it was wrapped around everything. I got back in the truck, called the office. They said, okay, we'll get you somebody there and as soon as we can. And I said, okay, well, it's really stormy, but it was still really hot and humid. You know, just really sticky hot. But it was raining and storming too. And I got bored sitting there, so I decided to climb into the back of the van, which it's open from the passenger compartment to the cargo area, you know. And start just straightening up the cargo, getting ready for my next delivery and everything. And it got kind of hot. I couldn't run the air or anything in the truck. So I opened the side cargo door. on the truck just to get some air in there. And I had hung a flashlight from the ceiling so I could see kind of what I was doing, you know. And I'd been doing this for about 15 or 20 minutes, and the rain had kind of slacked off a little bit. And, nature called, you know. I had to take a leak. And I didn't want to get out of the van and get wet. I mean, I was already soaking wet with sweat. I don't know why it bothered me so much to get out in the rain, but I just kind of stood in the side cargo door. I was looking out the back windows of the vehicle to see if there was a vehicle coming, you know. There wasn't, and I just was standing there happily whizzing, and I heard a noise beside the van, out on the outside of the van, kind of the nearest thing I can describe is kind of like a deer snorting, or a horse snorting, you know, noise. And I had passed, I had almost hit a deer not long before I had broke down. And I'm thinking, there's no way a deer is standing beside this truck right here. So
it's all right, take your time.
I'm still not believing what I saw when I stuck my head out the door of that vehicle. Now, this is a big Dodge Sprinter van, and I'm standing inside it, which it's 8 foot tall on the inside at least. I stick my head out the door, and I'm looking 12 inches away, face to face, with something I've never seen in my life.
Good Lord.
And it startled me. I stumbled backwards, and I delivered magazines, and we carried the magazines in these plastic tote boxes. Mm-hmm. And I had several of them open and scattered around me. When I stepped backwards, I tripped and fell backwards over several of those totes up against the driver's seat on the far side from the cargo door. And I'm still thinking, I did not just see. To be honest, I think I urinated on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I took a leak on whatever that was.
Right. Right.
But I'm laying on a pile of totes thinking, I did not just see that. And I'm trying to get my pants back up. I've already peed on myself and fallen in the truck. And it stuck its head in the door. And it looked at me. Now, this thing, my feet, it could have reached, just easily reached and grabbed my feet. And for a moment, I honestly thought that's what it was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I carry a lot of cash on my job, you know, for my boss, and he's gotten us all permits to carry firearms. Because some of our drivers have been robbed before. I keep a 45 close by. I usually keep it clipped to the driver's seat, which is where it was. And at that moment, all I could think of was getting my hands on that thing. And I managed to. Now, this thing's got its head stuck in the truck looking at me. I'm reaching for the pistol. And it screamed a noise that vibrated the entire vehicle. And this is not a small truck. This is a Dodge Sprinter 3500 cargo van. just vibrated the entire vehicle. I mean, it vibrated like when you run across the rumble strip going down the road.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That is exactly, I mean, I've hit that driving this thing down the road, and it actually vibrates and rattles and rings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it actually hurt my ears. It made me... The only other description I can give for that sound is one time I was standing really close to some railroad tracks when a train was crossing right there really slow, and he hit his horn, and that horn actually vibrated my skull so bad that I felt dizzy for a second.
Right, right.
That is the sound that thing made. Now I got my hands on my pistol, and I pointed it at it. And the expression on this, I don't even know what to call it.
It recognized the pistol, didn't it?
It looked at me. It was looking at me really, not really like angry, but like, you're in trouble. But when I pulled the pistol and pointed it at it, its eyes got really big.
Mm-hmm. It knew what it was.
Yeah. And then I remember it pursed its lips into like a big O, and it really made a really high-pitched, like a whoo sound.
Mm-hmm.
It was really loud and really high-pitched. I'm pulling the trigger, but nothing's happening. I realized I had the slide locked, and I'm trying to get it off. Before I could, it disappeared out of the vehicle. It pulled back and around. Well, I decided, I got up, I clambered up, I scrambled up. I don't know how I'd done it, but I got up between the driver and passenger seats, and I'm trying to look out that back door down the side of the vehicle, see where it was, because I don't know. I'm terrified, you know.
Yeah.
And
to say the least.
I took a step behind the driver's seat, the passenger seat, to look toward the rear of the vehicle, because that's where it had moved away to. And just before I got the balls up to stick my head out and look, it screamed again. And it moved diagonally from the rear of the vehicle past the door. It was going towards the front of the vehicle, but it was going away from me at about a 45-degree angle. And I don't know if you ever heard a 45 fired in an enclosed area, but...
Oh, yeah. I was in the Army for 10 years.
Yeah, that's... it. I pulled the trigger, and it put me on my knees, pretty much.
You probably lost your hearing for a while, too.
Yeah. All I heard was a pop and then a ringing noise.
Yep.
But as I did that, there was a flash of lightning. It had been storming, but it wasn't storming at that moment, but there was some distant lightning, and it lit up just enough that I could see that there was not one. There were at least
three or four.
There were at least two others that I saw. I emptied the magazine just out the door of that thing, and I keep two spare magazines clipped, you know, next to the pistol itself. I normally don't. I don't know why I'd hit at that time, but I reloaded, and I couldn't hear anything. I could just feel screams. Just every few seconds, it felt like the vehicle was vibrating. I grabbed the cargo door and slammed it shut. And I jumped up into the driver's seat, and far from where I was brought down. There's a small town, maybe 3-4 miles away, called Burnsville, Mississippi. I hoped the truck would crank, and it did. And I dropped it in gear, and I took off out of there. And I drove without lights and without windshield wipers all the way to Burnsville, Mississippi.
What's interesting about his encounter is towards the end of the show, the guy was like in tears. You can't fake that stuff, man. This guy was almost in tears towards the end of the show. That's one of the more memorable ones that stand out to me. This guy talked about how terrified he was. And he had a really good description of the creatures, too. Really good description of the creatures. You could just hear it in his voice. The guy was, it was traumatic. It was a very, very traumatic experience for him. No, the other one, too, was, I don't know if you were part of that show or not. We had another call-in lady who talked about being in the back of a truck and having this thing run to the back of the truck and basically try and grab her out of the back of the truck. It was an old, you know, back in the 70s, everyone rode in the back of the truck. And this thing came running out of the forest and was reaching for her. And when she screamed, I think the dad took a shot. I'll see if I can't dig that one up.
That totally reminds me of the Brenda Harris story. Do you remember the Brenda Harris story?
Yeah.
They were driving. It was like a, I picture an old like F-100, F-150 pickup, 70s, back in the day, driving down a dirt road. And all of a sudden, Bigfoot, Sasquatch starts.
It grabbed one. Grabbed one.
Them, drowned one of the little girls and took them off. And there was, and they never found that girl again.
Yeah.
I do. That was one. That's one of the stories that really sticks out in my mind. Probably most of the listeners will remember that one as well.
Yeah. No, the other episodes that come to mind was the Insider episodes. And I should play Insider too, just to for the audience to listen to it.
Yeah,
I kept it as paid content. But anyway, the Insider episode. So I got contacted by this guy. I know you weren't a part of it. I'll give you the cliff notes. This guy contacts me. And so he started giving me information about, he had a really good encounter. But he started giving me information about stuff I kind of already knew. He would talk about emails between the different government agencies and how they would talk to their fish and wildlife about certain areas. Don't go into these areas unless you're armed. On and on and on. A lot of really good information. And I was able to actually verify some of the stuff he was telling me. He had information Bob Garrett hadn't shared with anyone. So I knew this guy, it wasn't just BS.
It was legit.
It was legit. He was sharing information that no one else really knew. Well, I asked Bob about it to verify it, and Bob's like, how did you know that? Who gave you that information? How did you know this? How did you know that? On and on and on. He started getting more and more paranoid. The more and more I talked to him, the more and more I started realizing this guy's paranoid, probably with good reason. But he had a lot of really good information. I think in situations like this, people go missing and are never heard from again. And I absolutely think the government's involved. Absolutely. I think if someone gets too close to this, the government isn't like, hey, I'll give you a job. They just get rid of the problem. And so we kind of parted ways. And then we started doing the Down the Rabbit Hole episodes. And Down the Rabbit Hole episodes, we had this cop on. We'll call Jack. His name's not Jack, but we'll call him Jack. Jack was talking about how he was starting to investigate through police reports. He's a cop. Through police reports that about different encounters. Then he was approached by these two guys. And the strange thing about Jack, some people might think I put this on for the show, but I didn't. Jack, we were recording with Jack. And he started talking about these two government agents he ran into. Jack was on duty during the time we were recording this episode. And he got called out to a 911 call. And what's interesting is, he's like, hey, I gotta go. You know, it's just down the street. It's a 911 pick up and hang up. I gotta go. So we're like, okay, cool. Go do your gig. And, you know, the show at that point, because I'd rather prefer him to go take care of a hang up, you know, in case it's an emergency rather than be on the show. So I was like, okay, go.
You have my permission. Go ahead and go.
Yeah, I was like, go, go, go. Take care of it.
Yeah.
But what's weird is...
I would rather have him go.
Yeah.
right.
But what's weird is, so he goes out to this 911 call. It was a empty house he was called out to. It was an abandoned house. And they claimed the 911 call came from that abandoned house. And he got a call from the federal agency, chewed the mayor out, chewed the chief of police out, why it took him 45 minutes to get out to this call. And when they looked at his records, it took him 2 minutes to get out to that 911 call. And he went back to his chief of police and said, hey, it took 2 minutes for me to get out here. I don't know what you're talking about, 45 minutes for me to get out here. And what was weird about that whole situation, weird things started happening after that. After we started doing the Down the Rabbit Hole episodes, a lot of weird things started happening. A lot of weird things started happening. I was starting to get almost paranoid because weird things were starting to happen. And I got a call from Bob Garrett that night. And he was saying that he was getting texts, and he hadn't heard the Down the Rabbit Hole episodes yet. He was getting text messages from 111, 11111.
Really?
Saying, remember the torn up camp? Should have been you. He started getting very threatening text messages. And he showed me the text messages, and they're legit, but it's 11111 was the number. And he started getting these really, really threatening text messages. People think it was all for entertainment, but it wasn't. I mean, there were some weird things going on. When we started really digging into the Bob Garrett incident, we started having people come forward who really shouldn't have come forward and said anything, but were involved with some government stuff. And they were coming forward and saying, giving us information. Just a lot of weird things started happening, man. I had a guy call me one time right after I did the Down the Rabbit Hole episodes, and I've never said this before on the air. I had a guy call me. It was from 111, 1111. It was all ones. Thought, this is weird. Right after the Down the Rabbit Hole episodes. So I pick up the call, and I'm like, hello? And the guy goes, is this Wes Germer? I go, yeah. And he goes, wrong number. And he hung up.
Is this the guy that I'm supposed to be calling? Okay, good. See ya.
Yeah, he gets wrong number and he hung up. Yeah. So I started getting these weird messages, and I started getting weird emails after that from people who were, and again, this is before the whole Will incident blow up. I started getting weird emails from people, and I've never said this on the air. I started getting weird emails. They were like made up names. I got one from John Green. I know John Green. Yeah, I got one from John Green, and John Green's not emailing me. And the email said, stick to people's stories and mind your own effing business and don't get involved in this down the rabbit hole bullshit that you've been doing on the show.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Right? Not kidding. Not kidding one bit. I've never said this to anyone. And so I started getting these weird emails from people. I got one from Renee DeHendon.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Right? No, I'm not joking. In fact, I have the emails.
Why don't you just tell me this now?
I didn't know what to make of it.
It's creepy.
Very creepy. And it told me to.
Makes you wonder about your family, how safe you are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the one from Renee DeHendon told me to stay away from Down the Rabbit Hole episodes and don't do any more insider episodes. Stick to people's encounters and mind my own business and everything will be kosher. If I keep digging.
Because that sounds like Renee DeHendon.
Right, right. Well, he's been dead since what?
Yeah, he's dead, so yeah. He's talking to you from up above.
Before I left for Texas, I started getting weird emails from people like nospam@yahoo.com that said, we know you're coming to Texas. We know you're going to be in the Sam Houston. We know you fly out at this date.
Well, that's comfortable.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah, and that's kind of what, but to be honest with you, I always passed it off as just weirdos.
Crazy fan base.
Just crazy, like yeah. And maybe they're just guessing right on the... But I started getting really weird, especially after the Insider episodes. And I'll tell you another thing. I did Insider 1 and I did Insider 2. And 2 was paid content. And I got an email after the Insider 2 episode from... And this is one of the reasons why I didn't release it to the general public. But I got an email from a guy... I think it was John Green. And He told me that.
Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah. He said in his email, and it's not John Green, obviously.
Yeah, no.
But he told me to, it's a good thing I kept it as paid content, because bad things can happen to people who stick their noses where they don't belong. You know, let's talk about something else. I don't even want to go into this. Let's just talk about something else. You remember when we had Ron Morit on?
Yep.
He was a big celebrity, man. In our eyes.
He was.
I didn't think he'd come on.
I didn't either. He didn't even know who we were.
No. He was probably...
I don't even know if he really knew our story or not.
No, he didn't.
Warren and Lewis were supposed to get into camp the next afternoon sometime. It was usual for Bill and I to arrive in camp a day or two early to get camp set up for deer season's opening weekend. We were riding our horses in with Bill wrangling the pack mules behind me. With the trail leveled off at the top of the first switchback climb, I spotted a fresh impression that crossed the trail. I could tell it was one of the creatures. We'd seen footprints lots of times before, but usually only in or close to our camp. I was accustomed to taking the lead to watch for fresh sign on the trail, mainly human or horse, and there wasn't any. We still had several tough miles left to go to get to camp before dark, so we stopped just long enough to photograph the footprint, and then I destroyed it. We would be leaving the main trail within the hour, and it was usual to cut off at random spots, preferably in young growth manzanita, so as not to leave an obvious trail for others to see. But seeing the fresh track was exciting. We couldn't wait to get to camp. We finally got there just as the sun went down. It's not unusual to hear pounding sounds or the breaking of large limbs. Sometimes this was very rhythmic. We've wondered if maybe this was their way of seeing what kind of a response they might get. It was nearly dark with the moon already up in the sky, and we were still unpacking when we heard the first pounding and whooping sounds. We hurried to get our tape recorders out of our saddlebags and started recording.
Mm-hmm. There's two of them across the creek at the big rocks. It's a hard act to follow.
They sound like he talks to us and they talk to each other.
Yeah.
Oh, I am wild.
Right there, just seemed to move right through there.
And I disagree with Ron, honestly, on a lot of his theories. Ron's a little bit more on the paranormal.
Quantum physics things.
Yeah, he's a little bit more on the paranormal side. And he doesn't really go... And the one thing I like about Ron is he doesn't go into it unless you ask him about it.
Yeah.
He just doesn't, like, push it on you. You have to ask really.
You have to drill him on
it. You have to drill him on it to get it out of him. I disagree with a lot of what he thinks. However, Ron Moorhead's kind of got a special place in my heart, man. Because we had no one that would come on the show. I mean, no one. And he was one of the guys I contacted on.
He's like, Winnie who?
Yeah. No, I contacted him on Facebook. I asked him if he'd be on the show, and he was so generous. He's still one of the guys that, even though I might disagree.
Could you compare him to again on the show? I
can't. Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood, that's right.
Yeah. And what's funny is because the guy is like Clint Eastwood, man.
He is. If you've ever met him, he is.
Yeah, he is like Clint Eastwood. That show was a mess, too, because remember I got disconnected?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, no. And I remember it was like it was our third show, I believe.
We couldn't even keep a stable show going then.
No. And I remember I went off the air and I was like, oh, no, I was trying to dial back in. And I realized you hadn't said two words for like 2 minutes. It was like complete dead air. And I came back on. I'm like, oh, no.
We didn't even know how to run Blog Talk back then.
No.
Hey, Ron Moorhead, you want to come on our show?
The more I learned about Ron Moorhead, the more I realized how much I liked him. Because I remember one of the things, so many ridiculous rumors that go out on in the Bigfoot world. Like, oh, he did a hoax and he was trying to make a buck off his hoax.
Have you ever met the guy? You know what
most
I mean?
Most people hadn't.
Yeah.
But most people don't realize.
Most honest guy I've ever met in my life.
Well, it was funny. Most people don't know this. Ron Moorhead was like a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
Guy has like 8 businesses. He owned like a hotel. He owned basically like a small city this guy owned. And people were saying, oh, he created these CDs to make a buck. And I remember laughing at the time because I was like, do people not realize that this guy's very, very wealthy and very, very successful?
He's not doing this because he has to.
Yeah, and I hate to say that. I hope he doesn't get upset by me saying that.
He's pissed off already.
But no, he was such – that's what made me laugh about it because I was like, people who know him, he's not making money off a $20 CD that he's – I think they're $10 is what he sells them for. I remember looking – like doing the math. And remember I asked him. I said, Ron, you're losing money on these CDs, aren't you? And he goes, yeah, I am. And that's the part that cracked me up because I remember thinking so many people call him a hoaxer. So many people call him, he's trying to make a buck off the Bigfoot community. Anyone knows him that knows that's crap because it's not even close, man. The other one that I would say that sticks out, oh, you weren't there for Jack.
I wasn't. No,
I wasn't there.
Oh, man, this kid. He was doing a Bigfoot report.
I have to do an oral report for my third grade class, and the topic I chose is Bigfoot real. My name is Jack, and welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles.
5-5-4-4-3-3-2-1-1. And I'll tell you this right now about this kid named Jack. He had some of the best questions ever. In fact, he was a better interview than Will and I combined together. The kid was on spot with his questions, and bam, 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 next question, next question, next question. He kept the thing rolling. And I remember thinking, God, I hope this kid doesn't start a podcast because he'll put us out of business. He'll put us out of business, oh, man. And, you know, these younger kids,
we got,
man,
some competition.
Yeah, we're going to have some serious problems if this kid decides
it's
to start
fourth and one, and he's going to punch it in, dude.
Jack was awesome. I sent him and his dad t-shirts and cups. And
I'll have to listen to that one. I haven't heard that one.
That one's good, man. But I'll take this back. In fact, out of all the interviews I've done, Bob Gimlin, every one of them, Jack was my favorite.
Really?
Yeah, Jack was my favorite. He's the one that people ask me, like, what's the most memorable show you ever did? And Jack comes to mind first. Hands down, Jack comes to mind first.
That's pretty cool.
His dad sent me a video. He was freaking out about interviewing us, and
I was just excited.
And I was like, you know what? This is really cool, man. This is really, really cool. I would say Jack's probably my favorite out of all the episodes we've done, out of all the quote unquote researchers, out of all the Jack was probably my favorite. Probably the one show I had the most fun on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to go check that one out. I haven't heard that one.
Go and bump the mic. No one cares.
We should do a show just on bumping the mic.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
It was glad to be back. It was nice to sit down.
You should come back.
I will. I'll do that.
You're not going to do that.
Probably not.
No. It was nice to hear, though.
No, I will, man. No, I actually do. I appreciate you having me on. And are you going to give us an update next week on where you're at with the show? Or
with the TV show?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
You can read about it in the newspaper.
How you're on the want ads or what? Is that how we're going to read about it?
You can watch a preview on YouTube.
Yeah. That's okay. That's good. We are going to revisit this topic about the show again, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Will you quit pointing at the mic like I'm not talking?
You're the one that keeps kicking it. You're pointing at me. I'm not talking. No, man. Thanks again, though. It was nice to sit down with you. Thanks for the drinks.
Yeah.
Something acquired with the lights on.